Hello and welcome back to the Catch the Blitz show, season 2, episode 13, 12, I think it's
2, I don't know, I have no idea.
Where are we on? 12, week
12 or 13?
We're going into week 12 of the NFL season?
Yes, we're on episode 13.
Episode 13. Welcome back, everybody, and I guess happy Thanksgiving as well to all our listeners south of the border. We, of course, had our Thanksgiving a couple months ago and the weather was still semi-nice here, but I don't know. I'm a big fan of American Thanksgiving personally. I think it's great with how close it is to Christmas because I think here in Canada, everyone starts celebrating Christmas a little too early. And who doesn't love three games of football on a Thursday? So exciting week. No bye weeks this week either, which is great. And should be a fun day of some football.
Yeah. I mean, I always say it's the best week of the NFL season outside of the Super Bowl, in my opinion.
I'm a week one guy.
Yeah, week one. Okay, but week one is more because of the excitement and all that. But I think from a traditional standpoint and everything that comes with it, I think Thanksgiving, specifically that Thursday, despite us not even celebrating Thanksgiving on that day, I think it's awesome. I look forward to it every single year, especially because the Cowboys are playing 4:30 every year. But no, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, and you talk about good weeks in the NFL. If you're ranking Thanksgiving near the top, it's coming at a good time because what we just saw in week 11 was horrible, let's be honest. There were a lot of games this week that just weren't that exciting, low-scoring football. I think at one point, like almost half the games going into the fourth quarter, there was a team that had under 10 points in them. So hopefully we get a bit of a bounce back with Thanksgiving. I mean, Sunday night football was great.
I think it made up for it. The Sunday night game made up for the lackluster sort of games that came prior to it. I know outside of a select few, but it was definitely a weird week. I mean, you don't really see a week like that. We're what, 11 weeks now, and I mean, to see, there was a stat. I don't remember it off the top of my head. It was like something about how there was like 50% of the teams had scored less than a touchdown or less at one point. It was something I was like, whoa, that was insane. But the 1 o'clock games were definitely a bummer. That Oak Vegas game and Broncos game, despite the Broncos, like Pac mentions, they're the least exciting team in the league. That game was pretty, I mean, it wasn't crazy. It wasn't a crazy exciting, but it ended up being a fantastic game down the stretch. Devontae Adams played great. But yeah, outside of a select few games, it was a pretty poor week.
Like the Broncos game because it just adds to the greatest stat in football. If the Broncos have scored 18 points in every game, they'd be 9-1. Obviously, they ended up allowing more than 18, but if they had scored 18 in the game, it never would have gone to overtime.
Yeah.
So that Broncos team, they've scored 20 points twice all year, and they've allowed more than 20 points only twice all year. So greatest defense in the NFL right now and the worst offense. And there's another team we're going to talk about later in the show that I think they're just the Broncos in disguise. We'll get to that later. We'll start with Monday Night Football. As always, we had the 49ers just demolish the Cardinals last night in Mexico. And why this one's interesting is because I think it really creates a bigger conversation around the league. We spent a lot of time talking about the Eagles the past 2 weeks and how they're this undefeated juggernaut. Maybe they'll never lose down the stretch. Well, they've played back-to-back weeks now of some very lackluster football. Squeaked out a win against the Colts, and obviously they got their first loss against the Commanders. But I think we're sort of seeing a changing of the tide here in the NFC, and it reminds us all just how long of a season the NFL is. Yeah. Those Cowboys are rolling. 40-3 against the Vikings on the road. Nobody expected that. I'm sure you're on cloud nine. But also the 49ers last night on Monday Night Football with a really, really complete performance. I think we're in, what, week four, week five of Christian McCaffrey on this roster now, and we're starting to finally see how they can gash you in so many ways. Brandon Ayuk got 2 touchdowns. George Kittle got 2 touchdowns. Debo Samuel had over 100 total yards and a rushing touchdown.
Yep.
And Christian McCaffrey also had over 100 total scrimmage yards. And Jimmy G just played a sufficient game. So I know I just went on a big spiel there, and there was a lot, but I guess in short, who's the best team in the NFC now? Has that conversation completely changed just in the last 2 weeks?
I think it has. I don't know if it's a hot take to go as far as and say that both the Cowboys and the 49ers are now superior to the Eagles in the sense that I'm not saying the Eagles are a bad football team. I'm just saying there's a thing in the NFL, and we say it year in and year out, and it's do not peak too early. And I really am getting the sense that the Eagles peaked a tad too early. Like, again, it's not a hot take to say that the Eagles are declining right now, right? Even though they just pulled out a win against the Colts, and we said just last week that we want to see them play from behind, which they did. Yeah, they came back, but I don't know. I feel like the Eagles, if they're not declining, they're sort of staying where they are, and both the 49ers and the Cowboys are beginning to play their best football as we get into the late stretch of the season. But I want to talk about the Cowboys specifically. I've been a super pessimistic about this entire season ever since Dak went down in week 1. I sat here on the show, on our week 2 show, and I said that the season was over and I was ready to write the ship onto next season. Cooper Rush comes in, saves the season, deserves all the credit in the world. Dak's now back and the Cowboys look to be rolling. We got Tony Pollard and Zeke. Finally, you're seeing a reasonable and appropriate split between the two running backs that seem to just slash and gash defenses, both equally as important to this Cowboy team as the other. You got Dak Prescott now, who's back, seems to be playing his best football. I know he struggled last week against the Packers, but the Cowboys are averaging 35 points a game since Dak's coming back from his injury, and they currently have the number 7 scoring offense in the NFL. So this is a serious, serious offense with a serious, serious defense. You got Micah Parsons. He pulls up with his purple suit, and I knew it was just over for the Vikings. I knew it was over. It was 9 pressures, 2 sacks, 1 forced fumble, a 31% pressure percentage win rate, which is insane. You got Trayvon Diggs, who I don't think a lot of people are talking about. I don't think they're talking about him enough just because he didn't have the interceptions total that he did last year. But he's really, really stepped up his game as a coverage corner. He shadowed Justin Jefferson on every single snap last week. And Justin Jefferson only had 2 catches for 19 yards and 1 forced incompletion. Trayvon Diggs did. He is playing out of his mind. Now, with that being said, you go look at the 49ers. And I know I sat here just a couple weeks ago following that McCaffrey trade, and I said, you know what? It doesn't necessarily move the needle. I don't know if I'm willing to double down on that take, but I do think the 49ers are the team that I always thought they were going to be, which was, obviously, I was going back to our previous, before the season predictions, I had the 49ers only having 9 wins, but that's because I expected Trey Lance to struggle, and he ended up going down. I think the team is better this year with Jimmy Garoppolo, and you're seeing that, but the 49ers are a super legit team. And I'm going to say, just off of this rant here, I'm ranking the NFC teams as the Cowboys, 49ers, and the Eagles as of right now.
Yeah, I don't know, like, this is where I stand, and it really relates to what I said about the Bills last week. Let's be honest, the regular season doesn't matter at all for the top team. I mean, it matters, but if the Eagles go into the playoffs 13-4 and the Cowboys go in 12-5, like, oh well, great. You have a one game better record than the other. Like, to me, it's like what you said. It's about playing your best football at the right time. And I'm confident that the Eagles can turn this around and get back to playing a way that just frankly looked unbeatable. But at the same time, that was against some inferior competition. And yeah, you can't control who you play, but we're starting to see it now with the Cowboys and 49ers. I mean, the Vikings were, 8-1 at home, and the Cowboys really, really beat them down. The 49ers have looked dominant against some good teams as well, and it's the way they win games. They can do it in just so many ways. A week ago against the Chargers, Elijah Mitchell had 18 carries, and he was so efficient on the ground. Last week, he completely took a backseat in that offense.
Yeah.
I could see him next week getting a bigger role. Like, it's all about matchups. There's so many talented players that can hit you in more ways than one, and I think that's what makes him so great. So I'm not going to go as far as you and say that the Cowboys and the 49ers are now better than the Eagles. I want to see how they're all looking going into the playoffs and who knows.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'd now put them on that tier because I've seen enough from the Cowboys and the 49ers that, you know, I'm confident enough to put them in that top tier in the NFC. But, you know, I still think the Eagles are a real, real solid football team, but they'll have to turn it around because I've seen 2 weeks in a row now where they've probably been second best in those
they
games.
Struggled. No, you're right. I'm not trying to say, by me saying the Eagles are the third best team in the NFC right now, I'm not saying that the Eagles are terrible. I think there's a clear upper tier of NFC teams that includes the 49ers, the Eagles, and the Cowboys. But I do think it is important to monitor how teams are playing throughout the year. And I reiterates what I've been saying. You don't want to peak too early. Like, look at the Steelers a few years ago. They were undefeated 11-0. They lost. They rode sort of a mediocre rest of the season into the playoffs, and boom, they struggle, and it's sort of over for them. But the one important point when it comes to San Francisco that I'm really seeing with the addition of Christian McCaffrey is Jimmy Garoppolo is no longer turning the ball over as much. I don't think Jimmy has had a check down guy like McCaffrey before. So it's preventing him from, as safe as Jimmy plays, he does tend to sometimes turn the ball over. But now that he has McCaffrey, he has that security blanket that he can just go, you know what? Nobody's open. Let me dump it off to McCaffrey. And I think you're seeing it. And I think that's adding an extra dimension to this 49ers offense. That one that I didn't really think of when they traded for Christian McCaffrey. But the NFC is interesting. I mean, we're almost down the stretch. I don't want to say we're down the stretch yet. But look, week 12, it's only five more weeks, right? So, we're really, really getting down to the end here, and the NFC race is definitely going to be something interesting when it comes to that home field advantage and number one seed.
We are definitely approaching that sort of final stretch in the season, and December specifically is just, quite frankly, a different beast in the NFL. That's when you need your best players to be their best, and I think December is the month where we all see true colors from quarterbacks. It's a quarterback-driven league. And good quarterback play is just so, so important. It can hold back an entire roster, or it could propel your roster to go so far. And I think that's perfect, because this week we got to talk about the New York Jets. Zach Wilson now, I mean, I don't know. Do you have his stats up on the screen? Because they have not been pretty. And I think what's more concerning about... Sorry, I think what's more concerning than his stats are his attitude. Sauce Gardner and John Franklin Myers. I don't know if you saw those like tweets.
What about Elijah Moore's Instagram story?
Yeah,
yesterday?
Elijah Moore wants to line up as a quarterback now. I mean, that's not good. And both Sauce Gardner and John Franklin Myers apologized and said that they liked these tweets by accident. Okay, some coincidence there that both you have. I mean, it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to do that.
I don't like tweets by accident. I retweet tweets by accident only because I get the notification for it. And when I click it, sometimes it squeezes, it rolls down.
That has happened to me before, right? With notifications.
With the retweets. But I've never liked a tweet on by an accident.
I don't know. And like, those are pretty, like, if you're looking at that tweet for long enough to like it, you're sharing some of those feelings, and that's not good. I've read that unnamed Jets players have talked to reporters and said that Zach Wilson's body language in the room and how he walked around, and it's almost like he just felt like this loss wasn't on him, has really rubbed players the wrong way. And he's a young kid. Maybe maturity is an issue, because we know how tough it is to be a quarterback in the NFL mentally. Not good from the New York Jets. And I spoke earlier about how I think there's a team in the NFL that is just frankly a better version of the Broncos. To me, the Jets are just a well-coached Denver Broncos. Robert Saleh, I think, has done a great job this year. These players play for him. But offensively, they're frankly a disaster. And if some of the close games that the Jets have been in didn't go their way, their record would be a lot worse right now. And maybe that's harsh, because if they had won on Sunday in a very, very winnable game, they would be first place in one of the best divisions in football right now, the AFC East. Instead, they're sitting in last, and it's just because they can't score.
This Jets team is great. It's honestly one of the most exciting teams to follow. I feel like there's always something with the Jets, and it leads me to ask myself, like, okay, Robert Saleh comes out to the press yesterday and he declined to comment on whether Zach Wilson was going to be the starting quarterback on Sunday. And this is the first time he's done that, right? The very first time. Robert Saleh's always said, no, Zach Wilson's our quarterback. We're going with Zach. We're committed with Zach. He's our quarterback, and we're going to ride him through. This is the very first time there's any sort form of doubt. So this is very, very real. Now it leads me to ask myself, I couldn't help myself to ask, okay, can you label Zach Wilson a bust, right? And I'm all for letting young quarterbacks develop. I don't like labeling them as a bust just after, I mean, two seasons, a season and a half of a young player's career. But this specific situation, I think it has to do with Robert Saleh here. What you have is a coach realizing that the team is good, right? Like you said, the Denver Broncos, they're a better coach, Denver Broncos. The Jets are a pretty good team. I hate to say it. They're a good team. So he realized that his team is ready to win, not the Super Bowl, but ready to win now. So he needs to do what's best for 52 other players, not one, right? He's had his patience with Zach Wilson, or should I say Johnny Manziel 2.0, because that's exactly what he is. Zach Wilson, I have a stat right here. In seven games this year, four touchdowns, five interceptions, 55% completion percentage. Johnny Manziel in nine games in 2015, seven touchdowns, five interceptions, 55% completion percentage. So Johnny Manziel was actually a tad better than Zach Wilson. But where I see the comparison here is with their attitude, their immaturity, their lack of leadership. Zach Wilson struggling with accountability. You look at guys like Josh Allen, specifically this year, Josh Allen, Mahomes, Brady, Dak, heck, even Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence, a guy that's been in the league for not even 2 years now, have on multiple instances when they were playing games that their team had lost, and they weren't even the sole reason why their team lost, they're taking full accountability for their team's loss. But you got little Zachary here, Zachary Wilson. He thinks it's BYU. It's not BYU anymore. You're in the real league. You're in the NFL here. It's the big leagues. You cannot act the way you're acting and not take accountability, especially as a leader, a quote-unquote leader, as a quarterback is a leader in the locker room. You're just absolutely making disgrace of yourself playing in New York, and it's just been a disaster. And guys like Zach Wilson, you see year in, year out, Johnny Manziel 2.0, if you do not have the maturity level and the leadership to lead a locker room, no matter your talent levels, you're going to get phased out of the league so, so fast.
I mean, I think you pretty much said everything that needed to be said right there. And I love that you brought up Josh Allen, because specifically he said after those two losses, you know, it's hard to win when your quarterback is playing like that. And then last week he said, I just need to be better. I mean, not to bring Tua into this, I just know this because of how closely I follow the Dolphins. But when we beat the Steelers on Sunday Night Football, we won. And he said, like, I need to be better. The offense was bad today. We only won because of the defense. You have literally, and he's not the only one that says that. There's probably 30 quarterbacks in the league that will say that after a win, that will quite frankly say, like, hey, we need to. Even Russell Wilson this year is bad. Yeah. Like, he's taken accountability and said that I need to be better. The offense needs to be better. You just need some better self-awareness. And my whole thing with, you talked about young quarterbacks and giving them a chance, Jalen Hurts and Tua have both been such great examples of that this year. But at least they showed a lot more than Zach Wilson did last year. I mean, Jalen Hurts, his numbers were like an all-pro quarterback compared to Wilson. Tua as well, and they were both winning games and putting up a decent amount of points. They never lost games, you know, 10-3 because they just couldn't score. And then, I mean, yeah, to me, it's almost more concerning what happened after the game than
absolutely
what happened in the game.
Absolutely.
I'll give you my prediction. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is the starting quarterback for the New York Jets next year.
Wow.
We know the classic, this quote's going to go down in the Hall of Fame just because of what happened after. Cleveland Browns saying we need an adult at quarterback and then moving off of Baker Mayfield for Deshaun Watson. But the fact is, a lot of teams in the NFL actually want an adult. They want someone who's mature, who can lead a team. And Trey Lance's day is coming. We all know it's going to happen. And Jimmy just continues to further and further boost his stock.
He's a pro's pro.
Like, let's look at New York and let's look at the San Francisco 49ers. Of course, Robert Saleh, a descendant of that Shanahan tree, is running things in New York. But the Jets have a lot of the ingredients to sort of be the 49ers junior in the sense that when Breece Hall comes back next year, they got a great 1-2 punch at running back. Their O-line is very, very underrated.
Defense good.
And their weapons, the 49ers, they're all about yards after catch. I mean, Garrett Wilson can move. You know, Elijah Moore, I think they'd be smart to get him involved a little bit more. I know he definitely doesn't like Zach Wilson posting what he did to his Instagram story. And, of course, their defense.
Yeah, and their head coach.
Studs. Yeah.
Right? So, I'll give you a name, Pac. Derek Carr.
I like it. I mean, I think Derek Carr, he's gone through too many coaches, too many losing seasons in Vegas or Oakland to stick around there. It's weird because now they have Devontae Adams, so I think it's a harder move off. I've read people say that Derek Carr for Aaron Rodgers swap, get Aaron Rodgers back with Devontae Adams.
That would be insanity.
I think Josh McDaniels is safe. I don't think they're going to give Derek Carr another head coach, even though I don't think this Raiders stuff is on Derek Carr. I still think
no, it's not. I think it's just it's one of those situations where you're going to need. Look, the Raiders are going to be picking pretty high. Josh McDaniels didn't handpick Derek Carr, right?
Yeah.
And look, Derek Carr is a franchise quarterback. He's not great. He's not a top 10, top 12 guy. But you could win games with Derek Carr, especially when you surround him with a lot of talent like the Jets have. I just think, and again, back to what you mentioned, Derek Carr is a pro's pro. The way he handles every situation, the adversity that he's had to battle, the just straight up bullshit, excuse my language, but that he's had to deal with the Raiders the last two, 3 years, right? So I think that's a perfect fit. Him, Jimmy Garoppolo, you can't go wrong. Zach Wilson, Zachary. I'm going to call him Zachary.
I don't think you can call him Zachary.
Yeah, he's a little baby.
That's way too professional. I guess
he's a little baby. He's a little baby. Zachary. He's throwing a little fit, like a baby fit. Zach, did you let the defense down? No. You know what, Zach? Just give me a break. If I was a Jets fan, I would be livid. I would be losing it this week. But it's okay. You know what? They're moving off from Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco has more touchdown passes in two games than Zach Wilson has this year in his, whatever, five or seven games.
Joe Flacco almost has more passes than Russell Wilson.
Joe Flacco's the GOAT. Super Bowl winning Joe Flacco.
I mean, he had them playing. They've put up, what, 30 points for them against the Browns? Yeah. Comeback win.
Like, my fantasy team needs Garrett Wilson to have Joe Flacco back, because Garrett Wilson with Joe Flacco, oof, that was a money duo. Money duo. But hey, look, the Jets, you know what? I'm over it. Zachary Wilson will be on the bench next week and be on the bench for the foreseeable future. I don't even think he'll get a backup job, because I'm telling you, his attitude, that does not go far. Zach Wilson has all the talent in the world. Zachary Wilson has all the talent in the world. But for you to have longevity in this league, you got to have professionalism. And talent does not get you everywhere. If you have, there's far worse backup quarterbacks than Zach Wilson, but at the end of the day, teams don't want the headache, don't want the immaturity, don't want that stuff in the locker room, and you're seeing it firsthand here with the New York Jets just itching to get rid of this guy, and it hasn't even been two seasons with him.
Not to pull the I told you so, and I don't even know if it really counts because I don't think he's quite completely written off. There's a chance that he has some sort of way to redeem himself. I don't know. Maybe he's back there by week 14. I do think that they're going to play Joe Flacco this weekend, like you said. But I never was high on Zach Wilson coming out of the draft. I was obviously Trevor Lawrence, who everyone liked. And then I was a Trey Lance and Justin Fields guy. And I always thought Mac Jones was just going to be good, which I think he very well can be. But we'll move off of QB 32 and we'll move over to QB 1 and Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Like you said, it was a redeeming Sunday night football after a lackluster Sunday of football. Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, Sunday night football, brightest of moments, huge divisional game, a chance to sweep the Chargers. Travis Kelce scored 3 touchdowns. Earlier in the year on Monday night football against the Raiders, again, divisional game, the Chiefs were down all night long. Travis Kelce, 4 touchdowns. He leads the NFL in touchdowns right now. Tyreek Hill's gone. He's pretty much swallowed up all his targets. He's been the most valuable player from a fantasy football standpoint just because of how much better he is than the next best tight end. And that's Mark Andrews, who's very, very good as well. Patrick Mahomes goes out after the game and says that Travis Kelce is the greatest tight end of all time. I want to know where you stand on this, because it's brought up a debate. Now, I think he's one of the best for sure. Greatest is a big title.
I actually think Gronk, like prime Gronk was so good.
Yeah, I know. That's where I sit too.
Like so good. And I don't think a lot of people, because his career, I mean, from a longevity standpoint, like, and just, I mean, if we're looking at career numbers, at the end of the day, Kelsey's going to have better career numbers than Gronk just because of the longevity standpoint.
Well, Kelsey's, they're not the same
age. The same age. Yeah. They're the same
which
age.
Is crazy.
Crazy.
Like Kelsey, everyone views him, he's like, he's in his prime right now.
Yeah. Right?
Like and Gronk has retired for 2 years. He's retired twice.
And that's what I think makes the conversation closer,
but,
I should say.
But Kelsey wasn't good that young in his career. He sort of came onto the scene a little bit later.
But he was efficient with Alex Smith. He was he obviously he didn't have the numbers that Gronk did or the numbers that he's been having right now, obviously, because Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes, the talent levels are so drastic. But I think when people are talking about the greatest tight end debate, like people like to throw out names like Tony Gonzalez and Rob Gronkowski and I mean, again, half the battle with tight ends is, I mean, not half the battle, but a big part of being up there with the GOAT definition of a tight end is your ability to block and your ability to do more than just receiving the ball. And I'm not using this as a knock to Kelsey because I think Kelsey is like, if he's not number one, he's at least two or three, but I don't think I've ever seen Kelsey block, right?
I mean, he's not George Kittle.
He's definitely not George Kittle.
And I don't think you have to be that far, but...
But Gronk was, like, one of the best blocking tight ends ever, too. Like, he was a monster. You would let Gronk single-handedly just block defensive ends, right? Yeah. And he would hold his own. And now, I'm not going to use that because that's not Kelsey's game. I'm just saying, a big part of the tight ends, I mean, when you talk at accomplishments and just career accolades is you want a tight end that can block, that can catch, that can run after the catch. And I mean, prime Gronk for me was just a different animal, right? Like you would fear, I fear Kelsey for sure, but there was a different level of fear factor with Gronk when Brady would just give him the ball and he would just somehow break three tackles. And it's like Gronk was not just a all-pro type receiver. After the catch, he was like a Marshawn Lynch and Derrick Henry. Like, yeah. It was impossible to bring this guy down with his leg brace on his right arm.
You got the bionic arm later on. I mean, like, injuries weren't kind to Gronk, but I do remember when he first came into the league, just how dangerous he was. And I think what makes Kelsey so good is his IQ. Like, the way he finds these pockets in zones of the defense.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everyone's, oh, how's he so wide open? It's because he's a really, really smart football player, and he works well with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid at, you know, finding space in the field, and Mahomes finds him. Gronk was like, okay, who's going to cover Gronk, or what's your game plan for Gronk? Are you going to double him? Are you going to, you know, throw a safety on him? Are you going to give him some linebacker help? How are you going to get him down after the play? Like, he was just such a mismatch in the sense that it's like, it's impossible to game plan for. So I think the peak of Gronk was maybe better and maybe the greatest that we've seen. And who knows? I haven't even looked at the numbers. The numbers could very well favor Kelsey. I don't think that really matters.
Everything but touchdowns, I think.
That Kelsey has?
Yeah.
Well, Gronk, did he not come close to setting some sort of record?
Yeah, he had like 90 touchdowns, I think, Gronk.
Like, he was very, very dominant. I'm going to throw another name out there, and you might laugh at this one. I think prime Jimmy Graham was up there with some of the best we've ever seen as well. And that lasted even shorter than Gronk's prime. But Jimmy Graham on the Saints with Drew Brees was awesome. There was a time where I thought he was almost even on Gronk's level, and then Gronk just rocketed past him. But I'm going to throw Jimmy Graham as another name in there as well. And then, of course, you mentioned Tony Gonzalez, and Antonio Gates was great. These are all more
Jason Witten.
Oh yeah, Jason Witten.
Nah, he was a pro, man. That was a guy that, like, obviously he's not going to put up the flashy numbers, but he was a fantastic, fantastic tight end. I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer one day. But
he will be a Hall of Famer. His commentary career hurt his NFL.
yeah.
Because it was back.
No, it definitely did, because then he came back and he was clearly just not it anymore. So I think if people remember his like late days when he went to the Raiders and whatever. But prime Jason Witten was a darn good tight end, and he was one of their almost favorite targets. He was just so reliable. The classic Jason Witten would be like, okay, you needed 6 yards. He would just run up 6 yards, 6.5 yards, just turn around, catch it, fall backwards. Yeah. You just catch it every single time. But going back to the debate, like, obviously Patrick Mahomes is going to go there and say Travis Kelce's the greatest tight end of all time. Why not? Right? And again, people I think are making this a hot take. I don't think it's a hot take. Like, if Kelce keeps this up for, like, let's say another 2-3 years,
Which is a lot to, like, I mean, he'd be 30, it is a lot what, to, 35.
Sure, it is a lot to ask, but.
Yeah.
Like, the guy's having his best year of his career.
And I think the way he plays, too, he doesn't really rely on, like, athleticism or.
No, he's just very smart.
Like, he's not like Gronk where he's like, oh, he's got to run you over or he's just got so much speed. Like, he's just, like you said, he's very smart.
Yeah. He's just, like, he's a great podcaster, too. You ever listen to that podcast?
That's a content, like, goldmine. There's just so many good quotes from it every week. The dynamic that they have between each other is so good. Fun. And they got great stories as well.
It's so good. It's, like, one of my favorite podcasts. And it drives me crazy because half the time I'm talking about the Eagles. I got to skip it a little bit. But, no, it's great. Travis Kelce, Gronk, whoever the heck you want to name as the greatest tight end ever, it goes back to it. The tight ends... It depends what you want out of your tight end, right? Every tight end offers teams different. And I think that's what makes this position so unique because, like, some teams use tight ends differently than other teams, right? Like, the Chiefs don't necessarily rely on Kelce to block because they have guys like Noah Gray or other linemen that they can throw in. And they can just use Kelce as strictly receiving tight end, right? As opposed to the Patriots, we had Gronk block because that was a big part of their scheme. You have... Tony Gonzalez, again, was more a receiving tight end. Antonio Gates, Jimmy Graham, Jason Witten, blocking. Like, there's so many different variables when it comes to tight ends. And the one thing that we can all agree on is that, I mean, especially in, like, this last 10 to 12 year period, is the tight end position has definitely taken a jump, a big jump as to what it was just 20 years ago, right? Like, last era of football, you don't see tight ends necessarily as efficient and as used as tight ends are this year. Like, we're literally looking at a team that's running their offense through a tight end. When have you seen that outside of the Patriots?
I don't know. Those Atlanta Falcons with Kyle Pitts, they really do a good job getting him involved. No, it's impressive, and it's crazy how the game's changed. And I don't need to say this because... I think it's said 17 times a game on every broadcast, but it's impressive. I am going to say it again that the Chiefs are doing this without Tyreek Hill. It's very impressive.
Absolutely.
How they've shifted their offense, how they get different guys involved. I mean, you know this because you started Kadarius Toney in fantasy this week and he got 0 points. But week before, he was dynamic and he was involved and he was a big part of their plan. This week, he does nothing.
Isaiah Pacheco now going to get 107 yards in the ground.
Who's he going to be? It's one week it's Mecole Hardman. One week it's Juju Smith-Schuster. Both of them down with injury. This week it's Travis Kelce. The running back is like anyone can touch the ball. It all runs through Patrick Mahomes and him being back there is the ultimate catalyst for a phenomenal offense. And we always talk about the MVP. It's a two-horse race between him and Tua right now. Let me tell you that.
It may. You know what? Tua's definitely behind there, but I really think that there's probably two tiers between everyone else and Patrick Mahomes. I think he's just running away with it. Yeah, I think he's running away with it right now.
But, well, to me, it's becoming... I always call it the LeBron James effect, and this happens in so many sports, just because...
Yes.
We as... Not even just the media. Like, we as a society love something new. Mm-hmm. So, the fact that Mahomes now has been in that MVP conversation for, 5 years in a row, it's like he has to do more than everyone else. Whereas, if Tua or Jalen Hurts were putting up the Mahomes-type season, everyone would be all over this just because it's something that we haven't seen before. But with Mahomes, we expect it, so it's not as... engaging or fun.
Oh, it's like, oh, Mahomes drove the field for 30 seconds left to win the game. No big deal.
Let's check in on the third-year quarterback who's never done this before. That's how we are. Whatever.
Yeah.
All right, we spoke about Thanksgiving to start the show, so we have to wrap up with a little Thanksgiving preview and a little bit of fun. You put together a little list of what we got to go through today. Not only are we going to talk about the games, but of course we got to talk about the food, because Thanksgiving is big
all
for
food.
That. It's all about the food. So we're going to do not only a preview of the games, but talk about what our favorite Thanksgiving food is, one Thanksgiving hot take, and our turkey leg winners.
I love it.
So why don't you go ahead and start us off? Your favorite Thanksgiving food.
It's making me hungry now, and I'm getting pissed off that we don't have Thanksgiving now this week. But I love just a nice warm mashed potatoes.
That's what I was gonna say.
I'm a big mashed potatoes guy. I don't know if it's a hot take. I eat ketchup with my mashed potatoes.
That's disgusting. I'm sorry.
What do you mean?
What?
It's French fries.
No,
it's crushed up French fries.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Is that a hot take?
That's scorching. No one. And that's
come on.
That's a bad take. Ketchup with mashed potatoes?
Yeah, it's great. You got to try it. Don't hate it until you try it. Have you tried it? Have you ever tried it?
I know what it would taste like.
Okay, but have you tried it?
No, and I never will, because that's a waste
of mashed potatoes. So how can you hate it if you never tried it? Hey, it's good. Mashed potatoes, best Thanksgiving food. I'm telling you, I can't be the only person that eats ketchup with mashed potatoes. You know
that's like butter and cream and mashed potatoes, right? Like, oh, that's
yeah, but butter's good with mashed potatoes too. You don't like butter with mashed potatoes?
No, I'm saying that there's already butter inside a mashed potato. You don't need anything with mashed potatoes.
Yeah, no, a little bit of ketchup is good.
Maybe gravy.
You eat ketchup with your fries.
Yeah, but it's whatever. Like, I don't need it.
It's the same thing.
No, it's definitely not the same thing.
Same thing. It's inside of fries. It's just crushed up.
No, mashed potatoes are not just
fries. Okay, you know what? Maybe I'm on a low. Maybe I'm on the ketchup on mashed potatoes.
You're banned from having a Thanksgiving.
No, my hot take is coming up. My hot take is coming up. But nice warm mashed potatoes with some ketchup on top, that's great for Thanksgiving.
So I was saying like, oh no, I'm going to say mashed potatoes too. What a boring segment. We both have the same thing, but these are two different foods. My mashed potatoes and your mashed potatoes are way too different. So I'm going to stick with mashed potatoes as well. Because ketchup is just bonkers to put that on. Also, honorable mention, in the States, apparently they have mac and cheese on Thanksgiving. That's not something... Do you do that?
I love mac and cheese, but I don't have it on Thanksgiving.
I don't think it's like a Canadian thing to do. It seems like more of an American thing. I love mac and cheese, but sticking with the Canadian in me, I'm going to say mashed potatoes. All right, Thanksgiving, hot take, and other than ketchup with mashed potatoes. Go ahead.
Turkey sucks.
I don't think it sucks. I think it's overrated.
No, it's terrible.
Like, it's like, it can only be so good. Like, if you think of other meats, like, if you, obviously this is steak, which is, you know, high level, but it's like, oh, this is so good. Like, I don't think I've ever had turkey and be like, wow, this is amazing. I like it because it reminds me of the Thanksgiving time.
Yes, yeah, that's true. You know what? Like, the when you're eating turkey, you know that you're with family, it's Thanksgiving time, it's more about that, but, like, turkey itself, when I'm eating it, I never enjoy turkey. Never. Unless it's deep fried. Sometimes, you know what? It's different when it has a little bit more juice, but it's like so hard to make a good turkey. It's always dry.
I don't think I've ever had deep fried turkey.
It's good. I've only had it a couple times, but I know a lot of... I think, I believe that our friend south of the border started that trend. Yeah. And it's very dangerous too. Like,
yeah, obviously. You gotta
people, there's been some compilations on the internet of people... seem to be blowing up their houses.
Yeah,
when
you got to do that outside.
Turkey. Yeah, you have to. You have to. But it's even it's fallen over before. The oil catches on fire. I've seen it a couple times. I mean, I personally don't know if that I have the willpower to try that. Just because knowing me, I accidentally tip it over, and so I'll stick with my ketchup and mashed potatoes. And
that's disgusting.
But I want to hear yours, Pac. If you're chirping my...
To me, I think cranberry sauce is top tier. That's my take.
Oh, I hate cranberry sauce.
I think it's top tier, man. Like,
too desserty. Like,
it's delicious. You put on everything. Turkey, bread, whatever. Stuff. I mean, I'm not the biggest stuffing guy, but I'll still eat it. But I'll eat it by the jar. Like, I love cranberry sauce. It's delicious.
It's good. It's good, but you can't have cranberry sauce as like a main dish. It's too desserty. Yeah, you can awesome. It like, feels like you have to have it like with like cake.
No. And when the dessert comes out, I'm not a big pumpkin guy, but give me a little apple pie with a scoop of vanilla ice cream on top. Oh, man.
Do you like whipped cream or no?
Like, whatever. I think there's not, like, the greatest taste. I've heard pumpkin pie with whipped cream is good, but like I said, I'm not the biggest pumpkin pie guy.
I don't like pumpkin pie either, but I've grown to enjoy it more because my girlfriend makes a lot. And, I mean, I don't mind it. It's good one slice, two slices here and there. I'm a big key lime pie guy.
I've never had that before.
It's good. I'm not a big pie guy in general, but key lime pie or apple pie from McDonald's, I mean, can't really go wrong with that apple pie.
All right.
Quick. I can't believe though that you're making me feel like I'm alone on my ketchup.
I've never heard of that in my life.
Come on.
Like people, like your brother does that. Like other people do that you know.
Yeah.
No way.
My brother does it. That's it.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't even know if my brother does it. I don't know if my brother does it. Oh, I'm actually shocked. If you have ketchup with mashed potatoes, you gotta let me know. Or if you think I'm gross, you can go screw yourself with Pac. Respectfully.
No, that's disgusting. Anyways, rapid fire turkey leg winners, then we gotta do the hammer quick. So there's three games. Who's taking on the turkey legs?
Josh Allen for the Buffalo versus Detroit game. Just because if the Bills are winning, it's because Josh Allen played hero ball. That's the way that they win. I got Micah Parsons for the Giants and the Cowboys game. I think Micah Parsons is going to make Daniel Jones look like Kirk Cousins last week. And Justin Jefferson, bounce back week on Sunday night, on Thursday night, I should say, going to go off. He doesn't have Trayvon Diggs shadowing him anymore. He's got a little bit easier, maybe 150 yards, a couple touchdowns.
All right, not bad. I got one pick that's the same as you. I got Justin Jefferson. I think he's going to have a bounce back week, even though the Patriots have played some great defense this year. But my other two, the Bills. This one's out of left field. Dawson Knox.
And you know why? Knox.
I can just picture him with a turkey leg.
Yeah, you know what?
He feels like a turkey leg player.
Yeah.
So I think if, you know, maybe he gets two touchdowns, maybe they run up the score against the Lions. Sorry, Lions. I know you've won three in a row. You're playing great football. My Lions. Yeah. And then I got Trayvon Diggs for the Cowboys. He got a pick last time to play the Giants. And like you said, I think they could make it hard on this Giants offense, who isn't, they're not really rolling right now. So Dawson Knox, Trayvon Diggs, Justin Jefferson. That's the Thanksgiving segment.
We should have brought turkey for breakfast.
You just said you don't like turkey.
Yeah, but it's for the show.
It's for the show. It's for the show. All right. Hammer picks this week. I had a tough week last week. Didn't get a win. 0-1-1. So that means I'm down to 9-7-2 on the season. I'm fighting for my life over here.
I'm what?
You're 11-7. So you're
I got a 2-game lead.
I mean,
or 1.5.
Yeah, 1.5 game lead. All right. I think you have the first pick this week as well. So go ahead.
The first week, I'm going to go with the Vikings, -2.5 at Caesars Sportsbook. Bounce back week. You got the Patriots. The Patriots aren't very good. They're decent. Bill Belichick makes it hard, but Kirk Cousins on primetime. I know it's a bold take, but Justin Jefferson will carry this team. And give me a field goal at home. Vikings, at the end of the day, they're 8-2. Even though the Cowboys just blew them out, still a good football team. They're more than capable to beat this Vikings team at home. I'm going to take the Vikings -2.5.
I like it. Like I said, I picked Justin Jefferson. I like the bounce back spot for this team. They win a ton of one possession games, and I think 2.5 is a good number, especially they're at home, correct? Yeah, you did say that.
They're at home once again.
All right, I'm going to go with the Atlanta Falcons. They're a great team up against the spread, and you can get them at a pretty darn good price on ProLine Plus. Let me check here because I do have the number on using the BetStamp app. I'm a little concerned because they're playing against Taylor Heinicke. Is that what I'm calling
Taylor
him?
Heinicke.
Because all this guy does is win.
He is. He's him. He's him.
But 5.5 points, which you can get on BetStamp on ProLine Plus, that's at -132. That's a lot of points. I like the Falcons to cover that. I like it to be a close game. So that'll be my first pick. The Atlanta Falcons were a great team against the spread.
I love it, Pac. My second pick of my 2-0 week, lock it up, mortgage it, as I like to say. Packers +6.5 at Pinnacle Sportsbook here. The Eagles are trending in the wrong direction. They're sort of floating right now. Rodgers on Sunday Night Football. I like my chances. I'll take the points here. Even though I think the Eagles end up winning, I don't think they'll win in cover. You got Rodgers the last five games against the Eagles, 4-1 with 12 touchdowns to 3 picks. He fares well against Philadelphia. I think this trend will continue. Like I said, I don't know if they're going to win outright, but 6.5 points with Aaron Rodgers on primetime, I got to roll with it at Pinnacle.
I remember that one loss, too. It was on Thursday Night Football, and I think he threw a pick in the red zone,
yes,
like crazy late, and the Eagles somehow won the game. So I like it again. Close game. Maybe Rodgers. I mean, last week was a bit of a struggle against the Titans. Maybe they can get it back on track against an NFC opponent. My final pick, I'm going to take the Baltimore Ravens -3.5 on points bet. That's sitting at -110 against the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Ravens, if you look at their schedule, it is very, very easy to end the season. I think they can pick up a lot of momentum and roll into the playoffs on a big win streak. This is a team that their only losses have been in games where they've blown big leads. So I like the Ravens a lot. I think they're having a great season. They weren't the most convincing against the Panthers last week, but it was still a win. I think it finished 13-3.
Yeah.
So 10-point win. I think you could see something similar against the Jaguars this week, so I'm gonna take them -3.5 on points bet.
Well, that wraps it up, Pac.
That's the hammer for the week. That's the show for the week. Happy Thanksgiving to all our listeners.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Enjoy some time with your family. Enjoy the football, and of course, enjoy the food. Unless you're putting ketchup on your mashed potatoes.
No, I will not stand by that. If you do not try it, you can't hate it, Pac. You know what? We're going to do a live taste test one day on this
show.
I'll
do that. I'll try it. I'll try it live.
Yeah. We're going to do it. I'm telling you, I say this confidently. I know for a fact that I'm not the only person in the world that eats ketchup and mashed potatoes. And people try it, they'll like it.
Okay.
You know what?
Listen, I have an open mind. I like mashed potatoes. I like ketchup with other things. I don't think it's a good combo, but I'll give it a go.
Ketchup's good. Got to use it with everything. It's not as good as Chick-fil-A sauce, but we'll save that for a different episode.
All righty.
All right. Good.
Take care, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next Tuesday. See you guys.